All right. Good morning, Tanya. How are you this morning?
Very well, Lena. How are you?
Great. I'm
Yeah.
delighted to have you in this podcast. And yeah, would you like to say a bit about yourself, like, what you have also done for work and yeah, introduce you and also maybe Liam.
Yeah. Okay. I've done lots of things for work throughout my life. So I suppose one of the most significant things was I was a special education teacher and I specialized in working with children and adolescents with mental health issues and behavioral issues. So those fringe dwelling kids, and that was a really rewarding experience. But due to some workplace incidents, I was no longer able to do that. So I've had to investigate my life and what's meaningful and purposeful. And more recently, in the last 3 years, I started pursuing my life's dream of being a writer. So I don't write novels or anything like that. Mainly, I write content for businesses, for their websites or technical documents. I've written online courses and things like that. So no, yeah, I'm not an author or anything, but that's the kind of writing I do. And I'm also currently studying a photography course. So I'm in my 50s now, and I figure it's time to pursue things that are meaningful for me and purposeful. So yeah, so that's been rather exciting. So one of the major things that, other than no longer being able to teach due to these workplace incidents and some recurrent health issues related to that, was I was a single mum for a very long time. And my son Liam, who was absolutely everything, he was my entire world, he took his life in January 2019. So that just absolutely demolished me. I'd felt that I grew up in a household where aggression was the way of getting around things. I've grown up with mental health issues, both from family members and my own mental health issues. And I'd struggled through life and I thought I'd pretty much got it all down. But yeah, when my 25-year-old son took his life, that ended mine. And it very nearly did end mine. I was seriously considering taking my own life because I felt there was no more meaning, there was no more purpose to it. And as a result of that, I had been in a relatively new relationship, if you can call 8 years new. And my now husband, he absolutely adored my son, even though they'd only known each other a short time. And he had asked me, please, to not run away, because that's my modus operandi, is a bit of a commitment phobe. And if anything gets too much, I just hit the road. He also made me promise that, or he asked me to promise that if I was having any deep, dark feelings, to please tell him and to hold on as long as I possibly could. So my husband, Colin, was just amazing. And I've also got three dogs who helped me get through it all. So I basically, what I did to heal was I went into the Otways. And for anybody who doesn't know the Otways, it's temperate rainforest here in Victoria, so south of Australia, in Victoria. And I just hid in the forest on 17 acres for the better part of a year, where I could garden and walk barefoot through the forest with my dogs and howl at the moon and do whatever I needed to, just to let life flow through me and to allow that grieving process to occur, rather than to try to avoid it by keeping busy. So yeah, so a lot happened in that period of 2019. And then of course COVID came along, and that was, I think, for something for all of us, that it was another time to reassess our lives and what we truly want and what's truly meaningful. So thus writing and photography.
Beautiful. I just want to give you a hug now. Do you want to say a bit about like Liam, so maybe we get a picture, you know, what kind of beautiful man he was, and some I guess like share what you really want to share, you know, to get an understanding. I'm pretty certain you know what I mean, so share what you like to share.
So Liam was my only child, or is my only child. He always had issues at school, even prior to school. He had no real interest in other human beings. He loved animals. He loved nature. He was precocious. He had taught himself to read by the age of four. He was profoundly intelligent, a very intelligent young man. When he was six, his father suicided, and Liam, I suppose, took responsibility for me, and he also felt quite responsible for his father's death. And I think at that age of six, it's such an influential age for children. You know, they're going through some major developmental stages, and he just held on to that. We went through a lot of counselling. Liam had psychological support throughout most of his childhood. And it was when Liam was 12, we had had a number of diagnoses made, and I was working in mental health at a mental health institute, and I was working as a teacher. And I got talking to one of the psychiatrists, and my mother was also working with a lot of, she was a teacher's aide in a high school, and talking with her and doing my reading and meeting lots of young people and talking to the psychiatrist, I started thinking, well, Liam's had all these diagnoses, but none of them seemed to fit. I had a feeling that he was possibly what was back then called Asperger syndrome, which is now, just known as autism or autism spectrum disorder, but very, very high functioning. Like he had been speaking, he would have been about 4 months old and he was speaking. And by the time he was one, we're talking full sentences. So, and he just had an eidetic memory. So things started pieced together. And so we went and had all the assessments done. And sure enough, Liam was diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome or autism. So that also then added up why he was finding great difficulty, I suppose, progressing through the grieving stages or the cycle, I prefer to think. It's not so much stages, it's a perpetual cycle, a spiral. And he was also a deeply private person, so he wouldn't disclose much of what he was feeling. So we kept going along this journey, and he continued to have problems at school because he had difficulties interacting with his peers. He would have much preferred to have been, I think Liam's perfect schooling setting would have probably been a retirement village, because he loved 80-year-olds more than he loved people his own age. And being a single mum, I had the choice of either staying at home and teaching him or sending him to school. So financial reasons, he would go to school. Over Liam's schooling life, he went to seven different schools, and it wasn't that the schools weren't great or that the teachers weren't great. It was just that his needs changed, and as he grew and went through different developmental stages, different, emotional issues, emotional and social issues arose. So finally we did managed to find a setting that really suited him. So I'm very grateful for, it's called ACE, A-Y-C-E, which is Access Yay Community Education. And so basically he would go one day a week and be with other students very much like himself that didn't fit into any kind of education, other like mainstream educational setting. And the rest of the time he'd do his work at home. And he managed to get through VCE and he got quite a high score, which was awesome. He went to uni, he didn't fit in there. The structure of it just, I suppose, more the lack of structure didn't really help. And all this time, Liam's social interactions were more online. So like these multi-game platforms. So his social network were other gamers and people that he had met online. And I think he found sanctuary there. So we try to limit the amount, or ration the amount of time he was online, and then also being outdoors. He loved being outside camping. And so we'd do a lot of that as well, and spending time reading. He was an avid reader. So I felt that there'd been enough time where he had a nice equal amount of time. But as he got older and life became more challenging, he immersed himself more into the online world, and to the point where he would be up all night and wouldn't sleep for days. We were living with each other, and that then became a massive issue where I was always at him, get offline, go to sleep. So yet again, when he was in his teens, when he was 15, we went to go see a psychiatrist to see, because he was also having all these other symptoms. And it was like, what can we do about this? So it was basically he could be medicated. And for that to happen, due to the complexities, he was going to have to go into a mental health unit. So be an inpatient and be medicated, or we would just make further changes. So our life was a matter of whenever something arose, whenever anything became too overwhelming, we would modify. And instead of making Liam's world smaller, the objective was to, we will modify things and try to normalize situations so that he could adjust, but adjust at his own pace. So we managed to keep him connected with the face-to-face here and now. But as I said, as time went on, he just immersed himself more and more online. He did go to TAFE and he studied disability studies and community services, and then he found it difficult to find employment because he just didn't fit into that mold. He'd go to interviews and he would struggle with that connection, that. So what people were looking for, they just think he's a bit odd and quirky, whereas in actual fact it was, and he didn't want to tell people about his autism. Mm. So even when he was studying, he didn't use disability services. He wouldn't tell prospective employers that, yeah, he was autistic. So people just thought that he was a bit awkward, and why would you want someone like that on staff? So we had been living in inner city Melbourne and we were finding it very overwhelming. Melbourne was just getting busier and busier, and we owned a little house about an hour and a half out of Melbourne in the beach. And sorry, my dogs are going to bark.
All good.
My children are getting noisy. Girls, they're going to be quiet. So we then moved down to the coast and things seemed to settle a bit then. But it was unbeknownst to me that Liam had made a plan that at the age of 25 he was going to take his life. So what I thought was his situation improving, his mental health improving, his health improving. He was walking every day, going down the beach, gardening. He was pretty physically active. He had planned to go study agriculture, because we wanted to have a little regenerative farm together with my husband. And the whole time he was designing, and I mean intricately designing, the last days of his life and readying not only himself for that fatal day, but for the whole family. So much so that he made an effort to go to every Christmas event, and Liam was not a Christmas person, but he made an effort to go to every Christmas event in 2018. He baked for everybody, including my mother-in-law, who's celiac, and he'd found this beautiful gluten-free recipe for snickerdoodles, because snickerdoodles were one of Liam's favourite biscuits. So he'd made a real effort to connect with everybody and to say his goodbyes, but unbeknownst to us, that's what he was doing. So, yeah, he was living in his own abode on our property, which I'm in at the moment, with a little house, and then, and what he called his domicile. So I'm in his domicile at the moment. And, so I came across one morning to get him because we were going out and found that he had taken his life. So he had left a very detailed letter for myself, for my husband, and also for the first responders who come out. And between those three letters, we were able to piece things together. And especially in his letter to me, he explained and apologized for his life, and for the way he took his life, and the fact that he had concealed what was going on within him from me. It did work out. Now, after everything has happened, it became quite apparent that it was complicated trauma, and that Liam had just undergone trauma after trauma from his dad taking his own life, which he had never really recovered from, to severe bullying at school throughout his life, really severe bullying, and to feeling ostracized from the community. And although he felt loved and accepted by our family, he knew that without the family, he would really struggle. And I think that the thing that really closed everything for him was that he'd been having an online relationship with a young woman in the States, which I had known nothing about. And this relationship had been going on for close to a decade. And she had taken her life online in front of him during one of their communications. So they were, they're online like we are now. And she took her life in front of him. And that just shattered him. And he explained that to me, and I had no idea that that had happened. I had no idea that this person existed. So, and he just couldn't bear it anymore. So this is the third man in my life that's taken his life.
Mm.
So my father had when I was 19, and then Liam's father when I was 29, and then Liam when I was 49. So, suicide is something that's quite prevalent. But this was something that was totally different. And he was an astounding young man. And I'm blessed to have had those 25 years. And I'm blessed to been his mum. I feel pretty spectacular because I my personal beliefs, my personal spiritual beliefs is we choose our parents, we choose where we're going to be, and having that belief, to know that, for me to believe, and to me it's a knowing that he chose me. He also, that means he also chose this life path, but which he did, but I feel very blessed to have known such an incredible individual. And my husband developed Liam's eulogy. And in that eulogy, he said that the world has now been stripped of Octorine. And for anybody who doesn't know, there's Terry Pratchett's Discworld, and Octorine is the colour of magic. And to me, very much so. The Octorine is gone.
Mm-hmm.
But he was more than a person. He was more than a son. He was an incredible, I would have thought he was an incredible individual if he hadn't been my son. But yeah. He had incredible insight and compassion for the world, and he was very gentle, and there was something magical about him. So, Lena, not a day goes by where I don't talk to my son, imagine my son, long for my son. But I think also a big part of that is I have never been angry with him. I've never felt cheated. I've never felt that he did the wrong thing. And I've had lots of people, after Liam's suicide, I got quite involved with an organisation called Support After Suicide. And for anybody listening, if you have a loved one who has taken their life, I strongly advocate. I'm a bit of an evangelist for Support After Suicide because they do incredible work. They get very little funding. The counsellors that are there are just astounding and working with very difficult situations. And there's also peer support groups. So I was a peer support worker for a while. And being there, talking to people when loved ones take their lives, whether it's a child, a sister, a brother, a husband, you know, a friend. But I have had people ask me, you know, am I angry with him or do I feel cheated that I gave him life and he took it? Not at all. Not at all. Mm. And I know he's still with me. Liam will forever be with me. He's just not in an embodied form. And that's what I miss. I've also had people ask me if I could, would I bring him back? And the answer is no. Like, no, because that would be cruel. He was in so much pain. And I think if you love somebody, you do everything you can to help them. And if my part is in helping him is to accept his decision and to accept it gracefully. And that took a lot. That took a lot of soul searching out in the forest.
Yeah.
Just doing my forest bathing and like literally hugging trees. And it was the middle of winter, so I would go out barefoot and wearing like just jeans and a t-shirt just so I could feel something. I would feel the bitter cold, and that helped me realize that life continues and the natural process of life. We can't clutch onto things hoping they never change, because they're constantly changing. And to truly, truly love is to truly accept, and not just accept what you like, accept the things you don't like too. So, but yeah, Liam is forever with me, and so but yeah, it has been a very challenging time, and I think it will continue to be. And I think people don't quite realize unless you have personally experienced it, you can only guess.
Mm-hmm.
Like even, you know, with my partner, you know, Liam's dad taking his life and my father, it was so, so different to Liam leaving. And so it was almost like a catastrophic breakup. And the grief is perpetual. Like the grief doesn't go away.
No.
It just grows. I suppose I grow with that grief. The grief hasn't. I think for anybody who goes through those grieving stages and comes out the other end and they're no longer grieving, that's blessed. But for me, it isn't like that. It's constantly constantly emerging. It's like going through different growth stages. So it doesn't just happen the once. But I also consider myself very fortunate I'm consider myself blessed for a whole range of reasons, and which I guess comes down to perspective, doesn't it, Luna?
Yeah, absolutely.
How one chooses to see. And yeah, life and death, they're pretty big factors. When you think that, that's what we're talking about. Your life and death, that's we're born and one day our body is no longer here. And I think that also comes down to one's spiritual beliefs.
Absolutely.
I know for some that, you know, you're born and then you die and that's all there is to it. I don't know how I would have coped, and I don't know how I would continue to manage my life if that was my personal belief system. Because there is that finality to it. Whereas for me, I see that Liam's body, you know, is no longer here, but that he has progressed. He's continuing on his journey. He's just on a different plane, a different level, a different alternate universe, whatever it is. But I feel that he's evolving, and for me to want to hold him here would be hindering that growth and also hindering my growth.
Yeah.
I continue to grow every single day. I was saying to someone just recently that, because Mother's Day has just, and I didn't pick up on it, but because we have Liam's birthday, and as macabre as it might sound, we also have Liam's death day. And that's, so on his birthday, we celebrate Liam, and on his death day, the day of his death, we celebrate Liam. And I always know I'm going to be emotional around those days. And there are things I do to prepare myself for that, not to shut it off. But there's things I know that are going to be nurturing and healing for myself rather than me being angry with myself. But then there's other days like my birthday or Mother's Day, which creep up on me because I don't think about them. And then I'll realize that I'm getting pretty ratty. I'm not the nicest person to be around. And I've just got this urge to get out in nature. And it's like, I've got to be in the water. I've got to be in the forest. And my husband pointed it out. It was Thursday night gone. So Thursday before Mother's Day. And I just turned around to my husband. I said, I need to go camping now. I need to go. I just need to be out the bush. I need to be sitting by an open fire. I can't be in a house. I can't be with a phone. I can't be in front of a TV. I don't want a computer. I just need to be in nature. And it was when we were out, and then I'm like, well, now I don't want to go back. I just want to stay here. And he pointed out and he said, do you think it could be because Mother's Day is coming up? And no. And then it really got me thinking, and I just flooded with tears, and it was like, yeah, I think that's exactly it. That probably is it. And the same thing with my birthday. So as I said, the grief doesn't go away. I grow with the grief, and it doesn't diminish. It doesn't get smaller. I've heard people say that the grief can lessen. The grief hasn't lessened. It's just morphing. It's like the grief just changes. And I'm going to be cheeky here and say you knew Liam.
I know.
You met Liam.
I know.
And you were there.
And
gave incredible support.
Yeah.
To me after Liam, you know, took his life, and even at Liam's service, you were there. And were of incredible support. And I could see and still see the pain that other people experience.
Yeah.
From when someone, I don't think of it as a loss of a loved one. It's more the departure of a loved one. We don't lose them. They just move on. So I guess, are there any questions that, is there anything in particular you want to explore? I've been talking for a while.
No, I think it's beautiful what you said, because I mean, as you said, it's really personal. So I think everyone, you know, feels things different. I guess, like, if someone dies of long sickness, you know, you possibly feel more relieved for this human to, you know, leave because of all the body pain. But then you spoke about the mental pain, and this can be also so challenging in life. And I guess, I think everyone has down in life, really on the rock bottom, you know, out of whatever reason. And I think partly you can relate to the feeling that you just don't want to be here, and you don't want to do adult life, or you don't want to deal with any further things. Yeah, but as you said, it's also perception, and it's a really personal feeling of what you experience. You know, it's really hard to say, yeah, I understand, because you don't understand. If and it's also different losses, you know, different relations to each other, and yeah, also what you said, how you progress in the way you see it, like the tools you're having, and, you know, of what also comforts you, maybe on how to, you know, like go on with your day, even, or not feeling down. And yeah, as you said, that you feel like he's always with you. And I agree, you know, I mean, you have birthed him, you've been part of him, he has been part of you. And I totally think he's always going to be there, because it's also this, yeah, spirit thing. And and I guess I guess every human teaches you something, doesn't matter whether they're young or older. So, you know, sometimes, because I lost my grandparents in Germany when I was there like 2 years ago, and it's like, I feel like sometimes, you know, I also have these moments where I could just cry like this. And but then I also feel like, you know, I still have so much from them. Like, I really tune into it and think like, well, I'm so thankful I've met you, I've been with you, the things you taught me, great, we had this really close relationships to each other. And yeah, I mean, my grandma suffered from depression for nearly 30 years after my granddad passed away, so she also literally left this life with him in a way for all of us, you know. And it had been just a process, and then she got dementia, and then it was like, oh great, she has dementia, because she now forgets about depression, so ultimately she is in a good mood again. And it was nice of her singing, but she couldn't really connect to events anymore, but at least this heaviness in a way was taken off her. And I guess what you said as well, I feel more, it's like, yeah, being, even I think COVID taught that, like being in the flow of life and letting go and accepting, and yeah, not holding tight onto things, because you also can't. And you need to be aware of this, that when one thing is clear, it's like you have no control about anything. I mean, possibly a bit about yourself, but even you don't know what's happened to you in a way. And yeah, I guess it's a good thing to find comfort in that, even if it's really uncomfortable. But yeah, finding comfort in not knowing. And yeah, I mean, Leo was beautiful, and I think it's really amazing how you explained it. So, you know, it's and I think it will help possibly also people listen to this, because it's really comforting hearing this from someone, and also seeing how you can maybe handle things, or feeling even some empathy, even if people don't know you, but feeling empathy in someone else's story. And of course, I love you because you're my friend, and I love Liam and Colin as well. So, yeah, but Thank you so much for opening and sharing. And yeah, you do an incredible job. And yeah, I guess like my question is more like, is there anything else you want to share that you feel like you haven't shared, or maybe coupled as well with a message from your heart? I'm always asking, you know, of what you think will be really good for other people to some quintessence of your life.
I think one of the things that I've heard since Liam's died, and it was a conversation that Colin had with Liam probably about 6 months before he died, there's this saying that people say that suicide is a permanent solution to a temporary problem. That isn't the case for everybody. So I think that is, and that was something that Liam had pointed out to Colin. It was like, if you have been tormented, psychologically tormented all your life, and you've done everything you possibly can, what's to say where is the how is it temporary? So I think the thing is that to be a little bit more open about mental health and mental illness, and well-being, to accept that, yes, we might not like the decisions people make in their lives, but it's their life to live. It's their journey.
Absolutely.
And not just here, but if you believe in an afterlife, it's also for moving forward. And so to me, that's it. Just be compassionate to one another. Just be a little bit more open and accepting. And if you can't, just step back. You know, everyone has bias. And, you know, I think, you know, you'd have to be a saint to not judge people at times, but just to be mindful of that and just be aware and to truly be present with people. Because you don't know when it's going to end. You don't know when it's finished. To value them. And, yeah, and to seek help when you really need it. I think everyone's got to have someone they trust. And you don't always want to tell them all your deepest, darkest secrets, but just to be there with each other. And I guess my pearl of wisdom, it sounds pretty silly, but
sounds cute.
Remember to breathe. To me, there's times when I forget, like literally forget to breathe. And I think that's the trauma, you know, it's, and then I realize what's going on. I haven't breathed. So I make a practice of breathing. Intentionally breathing several times a day and meditating, and I find that very helpful. And I guess part of that breathing is also, instead of clamming up, is to move and to allow life to go through you. We are vessels, and let life and the energies of life flow through us. So one of the best therapy I've ever had was somatic therapy. I bless the lady who, her name is Rosenberg. She's in Torquay. She was incredible, because I felt there was a mind-body disconnect. And I now know that I need to move, I need to breathe, and I need to be in contact with nature, to be in contact with myself. And that is the most healing thing. But remember to breathe.
Beautiful. Then, yeah, well, thank you so much. I think there's a lot of wisdom in this.